In Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, the Apostle Paul wrote, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." I have wondered if the writer of the song that we were just singing had that particular passage in mind. Of course, that song emphasizes the fact that God will take care of you. The entire Bible teaches that, but this verse, I believe, teaches that in a very powerful way. This is something we know. And this blessing is not available to everyone. It's available to those who love God, those who are the called according to his purpose. That gives us hope. That's a great message of assurance. Well, one way that we know that this principle revealed in Romans 8 and 28 is dependable is because we see it illustrated so many times throughout the Bible. That particular principle is illustrated many times in the Old Testament. And right now we're looking at the book of Esther, which provides a great illustration of what the Apostle Paul wrote in that particular verse we read just a moment ago. So far we've covered the first six chapters of the book of Esther. Let's spend just a few moments in review. Remember that in chapter 1, the king of Persia at the time was Ahasuerus, and he removed Vashti as queen. He made a request of her that she appear before him and his friends, and she refused. Consequently, she was removed as queen. That brings us to chapter 2, and in that chapter, a new queen was chosen, and the new queen was Esther, who was a beautiful young Jewish woman. That brings us to chapter 3. We're introduced to a man named Haman. He received a high promotion in the Persian government. He came up with a plot to destroy all of the Jews, and he manipulated the king into making that an official law. Now remember, the laws of the Medes and the Persians could not be altered. So once Haman got that made into a law, that was it. It was official. All the Jewish people would be destroyed. I think you'll see God's providence at work, though, when you see how long it was going to be until the date when that destruction would take place. God was giving his people plenty of time to get ready. In chapter 4, Mordecai, who raised Esther, got her involved in this particular situation. Now, no one knew that, at least in the palace, that Esther was Jewish. Mordecai had instructed her not to tell anyone, and she had followed his advice. But Mordecai got Esther involved in this situation. He instructed her to appear before the king and make a request on behalf of her people. Well, there was a problem. She had not been invited to appear before the king for a period of 30 days. If anyone appeared before the king uninvited, if the king did not extend his scepter to that person, well, that person would lose his life. Well, Esther requested that others fast and pray on her behalf, and she said, "I will go before the king, and if I perish, I perish." You have to admire the courage of this young woman. But it's interesting, the future of a whole race of people was on the shoulders of this young lady. Well, she had a lot of courage, and she had a lot of love for her people too. Chapter 5, Esther appeared before the king. He extended the scepter to her. He was glad to see her. But because she appeared before him, he was curious about what she wanted. And he assured her that he would grant her request up to half of the kingdom. Well, she asked that the king and Haman prepare a banquet that she had prepared. Now, we know that the king enjoyed partying. Well, Esther prepared a banquet, invited the king and Haman to it, and they went to it. And, of course, at this banquet, the king wanted to know again what Esther wanted. He assured her that he would grant her request. And Esther responded by asking them to attend another banquet the following day. Now that's in chapter 5. In chapter 6, we read about some things that happened between those two banquets. So this is a very short period of time. The king honored Mordecai. Haman was humiliated. Now remember, sometime earlier, Mordecai had revealed some information concerning a plot to kill the king. It was examined and found to be true. The people responsible were executed. That deed was written down in the king's record book, but Mordecai was not recognized for doing that good deed. Well, one night when the king couldn't sleep, he had his record read to him, and he came across that event when Mordecai reported that plot. Well, the king wanted to know what had been done for Mordecai. Nothing had been done. So Haman makes an appearance. He's all full of himself. And the king asked him. Now, he came before the king to get permission to hang Mordecai. He'd already prepared some gallows. And he wanted to talk to the king about hanging Mordecai. But before he could make his request, the king asked Haman what he should do for someone that he wanted to honor. Well, Haman came up with this grand idea of what should be done. The king said, okay, I want you to do that for Mordecai. I would love to have been present when that was said. I just imagine Haman had an interesting look on his face. Well, he had to parade Mordecai around town on the king's horse and call out, this is what will be done to the one that the king delights to honor. Well, don't you know that really didn't sit well with Haman? Well, he was humiliated, but Mordecai was honored. That brings us to the chapter that we want to cover this evening, chapter 7. We find that Esther exposed the wickedness of Haman, and Haman was put to death. Look at verse 1. So the king and Haman came to banquet with Esther the queen. Now this is the second banquet that Esther had prepared. They had already attended the first one. The king wanted to know what Esther wanted, and she said, please attend the banquet that I'll prepare for you tomorrow. This is that second banquet. The king is there with Haman. Look at verse 2. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to the half of the kingdom. Again, the king asked Esther what she wanted, and he said that he would grant her request up to half of the kingdom. If I'm not mistaken, this is about the third time he said that. He wants to know what Esther wants. He's confident that she wants something. He's trying to find out what it is. He assured her every time he asked her that he would grant her request. Well, in verses 3 and 4, Esther made her request. And she asked that she and her people be spared from being destroyed. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Esther finally makes her request known. She requested that she and her people be spared from destruction. Now she went on to say that if we'd been treated as slaves, I would not have said anything about it. But there was a time set for all of the Jewish people to be destroyed. I would like to have been present to see the expression on the king's face when he learned this. He's probably wondering, who is going to destroy you and your people? How did all that come about? Did he know that Esther was Jewish? No, that had not been revealed. Now Haman used some deceit when he got the king to agree that all of these people that were so harmful to the king be destroyed. He was very careful in the way that he worded his request. I believe he was using some deceit. Well, it's unfortunate, but the king had decided, along with Haman, that all these people who were so harmful to him would certainly be destroyed. He didn't realize that this was Esther's people. Well, Esther made her request finally. She asked that she and her people be spared from being destroyed. In verses 5 and 6, Haman is finally identified as the one who was the enemy of Esther and her people. Verses 5 and 6. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so? Now the king was wanting to know who was responsible for destroying Esther and her people. I suppose he didn't realize that he had made this a law that all the Jews were to be destroyed. And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. Esther finally had her opportunity to identify Haman as the enemy of the Jews, and she did so. She didn't beat around the bush. She didn't use any deceit. She was very straightforward. The king wanted to know who was going to destroy Esther and her people. Well, Esther let it be known that Haman was the one responsible. Once again, it would have been interesting to be present to look at the expression on the king's face as well as Haman's face. Well, Haman lost his life. Verse 7, and the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. You know, sometimes when you get involved in a difficult situation, it might be a good thing just to leave. The king was very angry. He left the room. You know, I figure the king was mad at Haman. There's a possibility the king was mad at himself for allowing this to go on. He loved Esther. Now he realizes what he has done. But he leaves the room. But he is filled with wrath. Well, Haman was begging Esther for his life. Look at verse 8. Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine, and Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. Then said the king, will he force the queen also before me in the house? As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Haman was begging for his life to be spared, but it didn't work. You know, Moses said one time to the children of Israel, "Be sure your sins will find you out." No truer statement has ever been said. Here, Haman's wickedness has found him out. He's taken into custody. Not only was he taken into custody, but he was hung on the very gallows that he had built for Mordecai. Verses 9 and 10. "And Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said unto before the king, Behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, Hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified." I don't believe that Haman thought that was going to happen to him. And I'm not exactly sure how high 50 cubits is. But suffice it to say, that's a pretty tall set of gallows. I can't help but think that Haman intended for everybody to see what was going to happen to Mordecai. He was the one who was hung on those gallows. Everybody saw what happened to Haman. You know, I'll bet if I was a betting man, which I'm not, but if I was, I'd be willing to bet that it was quite a while before anyone else thought about doing what Haman did. Well, we want to look at a number of other passages because there are some matters dealt with in this chapter that we need to make application from. The story itself is very straightforward. You can just read it as a narrative. All the details are revealed. And at this point, though, Haman's executed. Now, he was the enemy of the Jews. We might think that the Jews' problems were over. But we need to remember that Haman's plot was made an official law, and Persian law could not be altered. So on the one hand, with Haman out of the picture, we might think, well, the Jews' problems are over. No, because that law had been made for a certain day, all the Jews would be killed. Now, chapter 8 gives us the details of what happened so that the Jews were spared. And we'll talk about that some, Lord willing, next week. Let's make just a few points of application, though, from some other scriptures. I believe it's safe to say that Haman was overcome by hatred. He was filled with contempt toward Mordecai. It became an obsession with him. And because of that, he lost his life. But the Bible tells us about many other people who were affected by hatred. I think this illustrates what a serious matter it is. Let's first look at some additional people who were overcome by hatred. And then we want to look at some passages that will help us in dealing with this matter. You don't go very far into the Bible until you'll find someone being overcome with hatred. Cain killed his brother Abel. Let's look at Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4, let's read verses 1 through 8. Now, this is another occasion. As far as I can tell, this is the first occasion when someone was overcome by hatred. "And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord, and Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. Notice that Cain was filled with wrath. He was angry. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. Does anger have dire consequences? We've already pointed out that Cain was filled with wrath toward Abel. That hardly seems fair, because Abel did what was right. Hebrews 11 says, by faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Abel offered his sacrifice through faith. That implies that Cain did not. Well, how do we have faith? Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Romans 10 and verse 17. We conclude that God informed Cain and Abel of what kind of offering he desired. Abel complied with God's instructions. Cain did not. Now, Cain did bring an offering unto the Lord, but it was not what God required. And God had respect to Abel and his offering, but unto Cain he had no respect. Instead of repenting and asking for forgiveness, and then offering the kind of sacrifice that God desired, Cain became filled with wrath and killed his brother. You know, when you have a number of boys in the household, brothers get into spats from time to time. I think I got into a few with my brother next to me a few times. I finally got old enough and big enough where I whipped my brother Bobby one day. Took a long time, but I finally got him. And the whole time he laughed at me. He knew that for about 18 years, it finally came to roost. Well, it's hard to hurt anybody who's laughing at you. Well, that's just a brotherly spat. I would never think about taking my brother's life, and he would never act that way toward me. Cain killed Abel. It all started with wrath in his heart. He had that wrath because he did not obey God. Abel suffered for it. Let's look at Genesis 37. And read about Joseph and his brothers. I love to study about Joseph. I've just finished reading the book of Genesis, and quite a bit of the book of Genesis has to do with Joseph. Remember that Jacob had 12 sons, and at this time, Joseph was his favorite. And the other brothers knew that. Let's look at verses 4 and 5. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. Well, those verses show how Joseph's brothers felt toward him. We're not through. Look at verse 8. And his brethren said unto him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Go down to verse 18. Now this is after Jacob sends Joseph to check on the welfare of his brothers. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into some pit, and we will say, Some evil beast hath devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. At this point, the brothers wanted to take his life. Now, what had Joseph done to deserve that? Now, he had some dreams, and he told them about those dreams, and those dreams eventually came to pass when he was the ruler in Egypt. His brothers came and bowed down before him. Well, those dreams were fulfilled. But the point I want to make is that Joseph's brothers hated him so that they wanted to kill him. Now, Reuben wanted to deliver Joseph, and he didn't quite make it. Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt, but through all of that, God's working all things together for the good of his people. Hatred is a serious matter. It caused Joseph's brothers to want to kill him. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 18 and read about Saul and David. Now in the previous chapter, David defeated Goliath the giant. I love to read about that, especially the part that says David ran toward the army. One young fellow charged the whole Philistine army. Well, that army was outmatched because God was on David's side. But Saul developed hatred for David. And that hatred was so intense that Saul wanted to kill David. Let's start at verse 6 of chapter 18. And it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one to another as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth. He was filled with wrath or anger. And the saying displeased him, and he said, They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more than the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. Saul had such hatred for David that he wanted to take his life. And I ask you a question. I'm sure you're familiar with this story. Did Saul have a more dedicated and faithful soldier in his army than David? David was loyal. But Saul had such hatred toward David that he wanted to take his life. You see, Haman is not the only Bible character who was affected by hatred. Cain was affected by it. Joseph's brothers were affected by it. Saul was affected by it. You know, that would lead us to conclude that anybody can be affected by it. But as we look at these different examples, I think there's a conclusion that we can make. The one who hates is the one who gets hurt. Now think about that. Haman hated Mordecai. Who lost his life? Haman. Cain hated Abel. Now, God put a mark on Cain and punished him severely for what he had done. What about Joseph's brothers? You know what they did bothered them to the point that after Jacob died, they just knew that Joseph was going to get even with them. And when they appeared before him down in Egypt when they were looking for some grain, now, they did not know Joseph, but Joseph recognized them. And he was speaking through an interpreter. You see, by that time, he'd learned the Egyptian language, and that's the way he spoke to them. They didn't recognize Joseph, but he knew them immediately. Well, you can tell from the conversation, the things that they said, that their consciences bothered them. And that had been going on for quite a while. And of course, Saul hated David. The kingdom was taken from him. It was given to David. And Saul eventually lost his life in battle with his son Jonathan. All of these characters, as well as others, show that the one who hates is the one who is actually hurt by the hatred. Well, that brings us to some verses that I think are especially appropriate. Let's look at Matthew 5 and read verses 21 and 22. Now, this is from the Lord's Sermon on the Mount. This is near the beginning of his sermon. He had given the Beatitudes, and then he went on to deal with some other matters. Let's read verses 21 and 22 of Matthew 5. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, you see, Jesus is contrasting his will with what the Jews have been taught. I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother Raca shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Did Jesus beat around the bush about the consequences of anger? He made it very plain, didn't he? Let's look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 4, let's read verses 26 and 27. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Those are some wonderful instructions, aren't they? But go down to verses 31 and 32. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Some additional very special instructions. We're told about some things to be put off, and then we're told some things that we're to pursue. Look at James 1. Let's read verses 19 and 20. James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man, now this applies to everybody, doesn't it? Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Now why? Well, he tells us in verse 20, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. I think we've seen verse 20 illustrated in the lives of those Bible characters we just examined a few moments ago. Haman, Cain, Joseph's brothers, Saul, and there are others. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Now let's be sure that we see the proper order. Be swift to hear, slow to speak. Years ago, I heard one preacher explain that this way. He said, the Lord gave us two ears and one mouth. We ought to use our ears twice as much. Well, notice the order. Be swift to hear, slow to speak, but then slow to wrath. And let's notice 1 John. We have to consider what the Apostle John had to write on this subject. 1 John 3 and verse 15 says, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Is hatred a serious matter? Just as serious as murder. You know, we've heard just recently about a number of people who lost their lives on the news. Just senseless murders. At least in some cases, hatred was involved. And while we certainly consider murder to be evil, the Bible teaches that hating a brother is murder. Look at chapter 4, and let's read verses 20 and 21. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. Now, John just tells it like it is, doesn't he? For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen, how can he love God, whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also. Well, the Bible teaches us about the seriousness of hatred. Now, as we're studying the book of Esther, we're emphasizing the providence of God. But we also need to learn from the characters involved. Mordecai had great love for his people. Esther had great courage. Well, Haman had hatred in his heart. Well, we can learn some positive lessons from Mordecai and Esther. We can also learn about things to avoid by examining that wicked Haman. Well, Esther called it like she saw it, didn't she? And she said it right. I wondered what went through Haman's mind the last moments of his life. And I have wondered if he had another opportunity, would he tell people to avoid hatred? I suspect he would. Hatred is rampant in our country today, in our world. It shouldn't be, but it is. And it's our obligation to try to help people see a better way.